Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Mixed Media Podcast for Thursday, September 17th. I'm Chris Wagner, culture critic for the Dallas Morning News. I'm a bit congested, as you can tell, but I'm still really good at this, I promise. I'm joined in the studio by Christopher Nguyen, deputy editor for FD, the style magazine of the Dallas Morning News. Hello, Christopher.
Hello. I think you sound pretty good.
Oh, well, awesome. Thank you. Guest host Lauren Smart is also here. She's the arts and culture editor for the Dallas Observer.
That's right. That's what I am.
What's up, Lauren?
Nothing.
Awesome.
I'm here with you.
All right. So we have a special super-duper hard news segment of Mixed Media. That's because Monday of this week, 14-year-old Ahmed Mohammed, who attends MacArthur High School in Irving, was arrested for bringing a bomb to school. Only it was actually just a clock. Sometimes a clock is merely a clock. Dallas Morning News staff writer Avi Selk broke the story, which in turn broke the internet. Now Ahmed has gone from handcuffed to hero overnight with accolades from the likes of President Obama and Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg. Sorry, Mark. Avi joins us today to talk about what happened, what it says about all of us, and what some are calling America's Islamophobia problem. Avi, thanks for fitting us into your schedule between MSNBC and BBC and all those important people.
Happy to do it.
Awesome. Well, just give us a little nuts and bolts that I didn't just say. How did this start? How did this come about?
Sure. This is a kid who just got out of middle school. He's in his first weeks of high school. He's a tinkerer. He wants to be an engineer. He was in robotics club in middle school, and he's looking to find kind of a similar niche in high school. And so he, figures the best way to do it is he's going to rig a little something together, show his teachers a little electronic thingy. And, he was very clear that this clock he made wasn't even anything he was really impressed by. He said he rigged it up in about 20 minutes, before bed. It's a circuit board, and a digital sort of clock display, basically strapped inside a little case. And he takes it to school and shows it to his engineering teacher. Engineering teacher says, that's a cool homemade clock. Maybe be a little careful about who you show that to, because it does look a little weird. So Ahmed puts it inside his school bag. He's in English class. Apparently the clock kind of like beeps in the middle of English class. The teacher's like, who's beeping? Stop it. Right. After class, Ahmed brings it up there. He says, sure, I made a little clock. According to Ahmed, teacher says, that looks like a bomb to me. And the boy says, it doesn't look like a bomb to me. It looks like a clock. And the teacher says, well, maybe I'll just hold on to that. And a couple more classes go by. It's afternoon, nearly out of school, and principal and police officer walk in, fetch Ahmed out of his avid class and take him to a room where there's four other police officers and his clock. And he is essentially, the official word is interrogated, but that's what it felt like to him, as the officers basically questioned what he had made. And the significant thing is, when I followed up with a police spokesman later, they don't differ at all from Ahmed's version of the story. He told them it was a clock. And the police obviously didn't think it was dangerous, or they would have evacuated the school. But they did say that Ahmed was being a little kind of surly or passive-aggressive and not really elaborating beyond the fact that it's a clock. And, Ahmed doesn't feel that there was much to elaborate on besides the fact that it was a clock. But the police ended up arresting him and charging him with making a hoax bomb, which is an actual misdemeanor crime. They didn't put him inside a cell or anything. They did fingerprint him, released him to his family. And then, a day later, after become President Obama and the entire world, they announced that he would not face any charges, though he has been home from school since then.
That's probably a good call once the president shows that he is against what you're doing to reverse course a little bit.
So, just to be clear, at no point did he say, oh, I made a hoax. At every point he said, oh, this is a clock.
At every point he said this is a clock. He never said it was anything dangerous.
That's where I got confused about reading the early reports, is that, was he being evasive? Were they reading into it? Or was he just a kid who's being cornered and questioned and, a little ticked off about it?
A little ticked off.
No pun intended. Yeah.
And I guess that's where, his feeling and his family's feeling and apparently millions of people's feeling that essentially this happened because he's very obviously Muslim. He has like the Joe Smith of Muslim names, Ahmed Mohammed, and brown skin. And so he feels, especially because Irving had, it's had some sort of issues with claims of Islamophobia you know, among certain elected officials. A lot of people think that that's behind this, although the police are very, very clear that they deny that, you know, and there's no evidence that the police took into account his religion when they arrested him. But it is something he feels very strongly happened.
Well, it certainly seems that that would be why the entire country, the entire world is paying so much attention to that, is that maybe that is something we don't acknowledge on a regular basis, that, you know, 14-year-old Lauren in Plano isn't going to get arrested for bringing a fake clock to school, mm-hmm. a clock that I might have made for an engineering class. But if you are the kind of person they're profiling at TSA or in situations like that, then you're much more likely that that would happen. I can't tell you how many times as a 14-year-old I had attitude and did things I wasn't supposed to do and probably, you know, put other people in situations that made them uncomfortable. But
did you make clocks?
But I no. Well, I wasn't that smart. I wasn't that smart.
I mean, it's true. This came up for me a couple of weeks ago. A friend of ours was over who was helping us do something, and he went into the backyard to get a tool, and he's half African-American, half Puerto Rican. And I had a neighbor actually text me and say, hey, someone's in your backyard.
Yeah.
And it just made me, you know, A, I'm glad they're being observant, but B, it's like, wow, interesting. I wonder if he looked different, if I would have received that text.
Suspicious colored man.
Right.
In Christopher's yard, check.
So the incident certainly brought all that to light and just sort of exploded. And so you're right. There's kind of the thing that happened, and then there's the reaction to what happened. So a lot of people, and this came up yesterday at our editorial meeting, we were debating it. And yes, if there's a device, you know, it was a little strange looking. I think everyone kind of agrees. But then the reaction to what they did once they had discovered it is what seems to be so heavy-handed and so overkill.
That's true. I mean, some people are blaming the English teacher who we assume, you know, either called police or had the principal do so, but. It was funny. I was talking to another MacArthur student. So what was the day after this became a huge sensation? I was like, what are kids saying about this in the class? And there's a lot of like really bright kids in Irving ISD. So his class actually managed to have like a debate about Ahmed and who was in the right and who was in the wrong. And apparently they kind of came to the conclusion that the police overreacted and that never should have happened to Ahmed. They did sort of understand why the English teacher at least, you know, took the device and passed it up the chain and kind of set these events in motion. So it's a lot of the scrutiny is falling on the police department, and it's now kind of drifting over into the, you know, city hall and, you know, the mayor and some of the council people, because there's this history in Irving, at least with Mayor Beth Van Dyne, of making what a lot of people take as anti-Islamic remarks, which she's been doing in public speeches. So that's sort of where the heat is right now. The school district may kind of slip out of it, the noose a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I'm fascinated by the process in which a story becomes viral and what the ingredients are and what makes it spread. I mean, you've been on BBC talking about this. Mm. You just did MSNBC, is that correct?
Yeah.
So you're feeling it. You're being stretched in all these different directions, and you're the guy who wrote the story. What do you think the ingredients are in this case? Why are we so fascinated by this? I'm fascinated by it. I'm not saying I'm not. Just mm-hmm. curious what your thoughts are.
I mean, to the extent I've had time to think about it, which isn't a lot.
Right, it's been a blur for you. Yeah.
So there's two things going on. These stories of, you know, schools overreacting and kids getting arrested for bringing harmless devices, these happen from time to time. And they become, you know, a little bit viral. They go around, you know, sometimes the state, sometimes the country for a little while. I don't think any of those have ever hit this kind of level where I was up, you know, late at night doing radio interviews in New Zealand because they're fascinated by this. So there's some other element besides just this argument that it's just kind of petty, you know, small bureaucratic authoritarianism, which is definitely driving some of the interest. And I really do think it was BuzzFeed that had kind of a headline, editorial headline, obviously. Ahmed is the Muslim hero we've been waiting for. There has for, you know, ever since 9/11, and especially lately in the last few years, Muslims have become just sort of the it minority that it's okay to pick on and to just say absolutely crazy things. And when you see the politicians getting away with it, you know that a lot of the culture has sort of internalized it and said it's okay to do. And, you know, I've been writing about the issue for months and months. None of the stories really ever blew up like this one. I think when you get a kid who can essentially symbolize that, and, you know, when you see this kid, you know, he grew up in Sudan, but, you know, he has no accent at all. And that matters to some people. He's very well spoken. He's clearly, you know, a little bit dorky. He's somebody kids
kind of
can relate
nerd.
To. Yeah. Yeah. And when they see this kid with the Joe Smith of Muslim names, but who is in every sense an American, who has been just what a lot of people take as an obvious injustice has been done to him, and they see the reason for that as this Islamophobic undercurrent that's been percolating for years and years, that's kind of the lightning spark that turned this from, you know, kid brings a toy gun to school and gets arrested, and which is on one level, and this, which is on an entirely different magnitude in terms of reaction.
It seems, too, that, like, I mean, you talk to the BBC, right?
Yeah.
And when they're talking to you, is there an accusation or just an acknowledgement of the fact that America has this problem and, you know, England doesn't?
That didn't come up in any of the questions that I've been asked. I do think that there are, I know that there is a lot of discrimination against Muslims in some European countries, but I think it's an entirely different case because there are huge waves of immigrants from Muslim countries coming into these traditionally Western countries, and, you know, they're at a different socioeconomic level, they have different culture. They probably have more crime in their communities. And so that doesn't exist in America. Our Muslim population is like something like 1 or 2%. When you hear arguments, stuff like the mayor has been at least abiding, if not promoting in her speeches, that Muslims are plotting to like take over American courts. I mean, that's just, I have to be objective, but that's crazy. And that's a uniquely American problem because we're raising this boogeyman out of a population that's like one of the least powerful and populous in America. I mean, the Jews in Europe before World War II had about the same percentage of the population as the Muslims in America than it did now. And they were the boogeyman for decades before that happened.
Whenever something like this happens in Texas, I just imagine like Arizona and Alabama, Mississippi sighing with relief. It's like, ah, Texas.
Dodge that one.
Just like we do when something bizarre happens in Florida or somewhere else. Mm-hmm. We're not the craziest. Awesome.
Yeah. I think the social media response is something we have to talk about. I know your story is already up to like 2.3 million views, I think the last number I saw. I love that it was Ahmed's sisters that created his first Twitter account.
That's the thing I love most is, despite being just a total tech nerd, you know, this is a kid who makes his own radios and his room looks like, you know, just littered with circuit boards and wires. He had absolutely no interest in social media. And, you know, I asked him when I first interviewed him before he became international, what are your friends, you know, saying about, you know, are people tweeting about this going on? Oh, I don't know. I don't have any interest in social media. He didn't have an account. He had a Kick account, his sisters say, and that was it. So, and we're talking, his sisters are like 17 and 18 years old. So when the story goes out and it starts, you know, getting retweeted off the Dallas Morning News and NBC, which is a television story, Channel 8, and then this hashtag kind of crops up, which apparently there was like a UT Arlington student, I've read an article, created the hashtag I Stand With Ahmed that very quickly became viral. So the sisters decide, I think sometime over the course of that night, that he needs a Twitter account. So they make @IStandWithAhmed. And it's there for him in the morning, and he's, you know, getting bounced around from one interview to the other. And the sister's like, what do you want to tweet out? And so when I visited them that morning, Ima and Aisha, the two sisters, were kind of simultaneously his media handlers because they were sort of controlling this account,
right,
but also just like starstruck, you know, fans. Like, it's number two trend, like just the number two unpromoted trend on Twitter. Oh my God, it's just number one, and I only have 100 followers. I'm like, how did all this happen? It's like, it's just, it was a beautiful little scene.
They're so jealous of him. You know they are. 18-year-old girls, like, yeah, damn little brother has 5 million Twitter followers now.
It makes me wonder too if now that this story has gone so viral, it becomes so much in the national attention, if it will function as the first in many conversations we have about this happening to young people who are growing up in America, this Islamophobia. Like, I wonder because this seems to be how America media works. If this will be something now, we'll say, oh well, this also happened in Arizona, Florida, Mississippi,
everywhere,
or New York, everywhere. And now we'll pay a little bit more attention to it.
I think at the very least, it's going to be harder for people to make bigoted statements about Muslims, in public or semi-public, and expect just no reaction. I think the social media craze will fade eventually, but I think it's going to have some lasting mark in terms of that conversation.
What happens next for Ahmed? Is he going back to school? I know there was word that he might choose not to go back to MacArthur.
Yeah, I believe he said that at a press conference late last night or yesterday evening that he's thinking about transferring, I think the quote was, to any other school. but I do know that, like, I think he's fielding multiple scholarship offers, funds, as well as, like, TAMS just offered to set him up full scholarship at a good charter school in Texas if he wants to, or maybe it was in Maryland. This is a kid who, at least right now, can take his pick of where he wants to go back to school.
Avi Selk, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You can keep up with Avi on Twitter at Avi Selk, AviSelk, and read his stories at DallasNews.com. We'll also put a link to them on our show page at guidelive.com/podcast. This has been a special episode of the Mixed Media Podcast. You can subscribe to the show and listen to more episodes on iTunes. Just search for our name. If you have feedback or a comment on today's show, drop us an email at mixedmedia@dallasnews.com or send us a tweet at @mixedmediapod. Today's show was engineered by Tommy Noel and produced by Christopher Wynn. We'll be back next Thursday with a new episode. Until then, for Christopher Wynn, Lauren Smart, and Avi Selk, I'm Chris Wagner, and we thank you for joining us.